And with that, we are ready to proceed with the case of Aggregate Industries versus City of Commerce City.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. I'm Patrick Wilson on behalf of Commerce City. I would like to reserve 5 minutes of my time for rebuttal. This appeal concerns a dispute over a local sales and use tax assessment that was issued by the City of Commerce City against the appellee, Aggregate Industries. What the city is asking this court to do is reverse the trial court's erroneous conclusion that the activities engaged in by Aggregate Industries may not be taxed due to what's called the storage exclusion in the city's code. The storage exclusion.
I asked a question about your statement of the issue there. What are the activities that the city would tax?
Well, the city taxes the purchase of the materials.
All right, but that's come and gone.
Right. That's why this transaction should be taxable in the beginning. Mm-hmm. The activities that would be subject to tax would be the use, the placing the materials into construction projects, almost anything. What I'm suggesting is that the storage exclusion only excludes from taxation the act of storage. That's right. All that by its own definition can exclude.
Accepting for purposes of this argument that premise here, for the purpose of this question,
mm-hmm.
Would you be taxing only the movement of the product out of the city, or would you be taxing the use that occurs outside the city?
I don't believe that there's a tax that if we're looking at a vacuum, that there's just movement of construction and building materials or any other tangible personal property. I don't believe there's a tax for that. The tax is premised upon a retail sale, and that's what happens here, is that there's a retail sale from KC Industries, KC Asphalt, to Aggregate. It's a retail sale because it was never eventually sold to a third party. It was never eventually resold. So the tax is triggered by an acquisition, a purchase. And then what Aggregate's trying to do is say, well, while we picked it up, we stored it in our trucks, and therefore you can't tax us at all. And then what I'm suggesting is that the district court's order, first of all, broadly and overly literally applies the definition of storage to the act when somebody comes to the jurisdiction, takes delivery of a product, pays for it, and then immediately transports it. And I'm suggesting that.
I'm still confused. I want to make sure I understand how this works in practice, or how you claim it should work in practice. You said that the tax, I presume you mean the use tax, is triggered upon purchase.
The sales tax is triggered upon purchase. However, okay. In this case, no sales tax was paid.
Correct. So let's assume the situation, as we have here, that no sales tax is paid at the time of purchase.
Okay.
Therefore, your position is there is a use tax that is owed at some point, assuming a retail sale.
Correct.
So isn't it the retail sale that triggers the use tax?
It's the retail sale that triggers either the sales tax or the use tax. The use tax, if the sales tax is not paid, the city goes after the purchaser with the use tax. It's
right.
Just two sides of the same coin.
And right, as happened here, there's no sales tax collected
right.
By the vendor, by the seller. When is the buyer here, Aggregate, supposed to pay the tax?
When they get an assessment from the city. And they were given
so
an assessment.
To wait until they get an assessment.
No, they can submit.
They're
encouraged to submit use taxes, and when Aggregate realizes that, boy, 47% of this material, we never resold that. We used it ourselves. They should be filling out a use tax and paying a proportional amount on that 47% that they used in their own projects.
All right, let me assume that happens, or should happen. But let's also assume that Aggregate uses the material that's purchased in Commerce City somewhere outside Commerce City's jurisdiction, in another jurisdiction.
Correct.
And that other jurisdiction wants to impose a use tax.
On the paving of the material?
The same material.
Okay.
So you've got two jurisdictions who want to impose a use tax.
Mm-hmm.
And I realize in your brief you say, well, you know, they can simply request a refund, to which my response would have been, and you can deny it. So what mechanism is there for a situation where two competing jurisdictions are both claiming a right to a use tax?
Well, in the state use tax dispute resolution statute 29.2.106.1, it specifically provides for a situation where there are two jurisdictions. And both jurisdictions and the taxpayer are brought to the district court, and it's resolved there. And so,
how is it resolved? Is it simply first pay, you win, or
no?
How does it work?
The city has always taken the position in this case that if it were the case that a local jurisdiction, and there are only two in the whole Front Range, if it were the case that a use tax was imposed on that material when it was paved, then all that aggregate has to do is come back and show that that tax was lawfully imposed and that it was paid, and then that refund will be issued. And if we deny it, we'll go to the district court and we'll lose. So there's a mechanism in that. Take note, aggregate didn't use that mechanism. There's a provision in the city's code, 20-5-0, that says we can't charge our tax when a tax is due to another jurisdiction. Well, why didn't they raise that in this litigation? Because they didn't pay that tax in that later jurisdiction. They sent some representative copies of use tax returns. Their testimony was that we generally pay this. They never tied these purchases to a subsequent use tax being levied in the later jurisdiction. What aggregate should have done in this case is that when it purchased, if KC Asphalt never collected the sales tax, aggregate should have paid a use tax on 100% of the materials that it used. Then later, when it realized that it was actually going to resell some portion of that, then and only then did it become entitled to an exemption, a wholesaler's exemption, because it resold it later on down the stream. What aggregate wants us to do is just to pretend that all of its material is going to be resold, even though it knows and everyone knows, and historically the company has utilized approximately 50% in its own construction activities as a general contractor, as a paving contractor. What aggregate wants us to do is just to pretend that there is no, that all of this is going to be resold, so it avoids a tax on the first end. And then as it gets mixed into different projects and gets sent out to different jurisdictions, there's no way to tell whether or not a tax is really ever paid. The city is left to guess, well, was that paid or not? So no, we have to assess that tax, and if aggregate comes back and substantiates that a local sales tax or a local use tax was imposed in Aurora or Thornton or in Adams County or whatnot, it will get a refund. It's required by its code. It's 25-0. So there's a mechanism that prevents the double taxation in this kind of situation. What we can't do, and what aggregate's trying to do, is squeeze itself through a taxing scenario and come out tax-free. And that this court should not condone.
Well, let me ask you about the statutory construction in this case. What does the ordinary and common meaning of the city code mean here? I mean, I looked at your brief and it looked like you were conceding that maybe the ordinary and common meaning supported their position. Could you address that?
The definition of storage, which is, there's the storage exclusion and there's a definitional section where storage is specifically defined. The city council necessarily had to encompass a variety of situations. It's legislative drafting, it has to be very broad and anticipate a variety of situations. The storage definition includes the taking of possession of and the control and dominion over tangible personal property for any length of time. However, I would submit to you that if we're talking about storage and we're using the definition of storage, implicit in that is that there's some notion of storage. And simply pulling up to a refinery and filling your truck with asphalt cement and then immediately driving away doesn't constitute the storage of construction and building materials. That type of application, the construction of that was given by the district court, leads to an absurd result. If I go to Home Depot and for some reason Home Depot doesn't collect the sales tax, like I say it's a tax exempt job, and I put some 4x4s or 2x4s in the back of my truck and I drive away, is that the storage of construction and building materials? It just leads to an absurd result.
So are you conceding a drafting error in the code, and are you asking us to?
I'm not saying a drafting error. I think the city council has to draft these things as best it can, and it has to accomplish the intent of when construction and building materials are stored, even if momentarily, that is storage. However, you have to first get to some kind of act of storage before you do that. I would also suggest to you that the literal interpretation of the code, the literal application of the city's definitional provision, does not apply when there is contrary legislative intent. And immediately before, immediately preceding the storage exclusion, there's an express statement that says when a contractor comes to Commerce City and takes delivery of materials, and then those materials are taken elsewhere for use, the tax still applies. There's another indication, a contrary indication of the tax applying immediately after that storage exclusion. Irrespective of this, the storage exclusion only prevents the use tax from reaching the storage of materials. Here, aggregate purchased the material, and that is not exempt. For those reasons, the district court's order should be reversed. Here, the parties have both asked this court to go on and consider two issues that were not reached by the district court, the component parts exemption and the statute of limitations issue. The component parts exemption cannot apply. In this instance, the aggregate purchased material and used it, half of it, in its own construction activities. By definition in the code, it is the end user, and that is a retail purchase. So therefore, the code provision precludes it from getting to that component part manufacturer's exemption. As for the statute of limitations, aggregate signed an express, knowing, and intentional waiver of the 3-year statute of limitations, allowing the city to proceed on all 36 months of its assessment. I'd like to reserve the rest of my time, if I can, for rebuttal. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. Neil Pomeranz, bar number 24741, on behalf of Aggregate Industries, the taxpayer. I'd like to begin by addressing a few of the issues that came up in Mr. Wilson's argument. Judge Miller, you asked what activities is the city claiming it can tax here, and there was a lot of discussion about the original purchase itself. That's not what's being taxed when a use tax is applied here, and that's what this assessment is, a use tax, not a sales tax. A sales tax is a tax that's imposed on the retailer based upon the sale and purchase transaction. That can be found in Commerce City's code in their definition of sales tax. It plainly says the tax imposed upon the retailer based upon the purchase-sale transaction. The use tax, by contrast, again, the tax that's been applied here, is a tax that's applied on events that happen after that purchase-sale transaction, use, consumption, storage, but for this exclusion for construction materials, distribution. And so what the city has to show is that there was some type of event that took place after the purchase sale transaction that is sufficient to allow this tax to be imposed. Okay. It is true that a use tax can't be imposed unless as a predicate there was an earlier purchase sale transaction, but that's not what's being taxed when a use tax is being imposed. And I would submit that there is no event that takes place after that purchase sale transaction that is sufficient to allow the city to impose its tax here. That said, if you look to the purchase sale transaction, we do think that that's clearly encompassed within the scope of storage, within the definition of storage, and therefore still would not permit the tax given the storage exclusion for construction material.
So under your construction then, whenever a purchaser can somehow persuade a seller that they just, they don't have to pay a sales tax, they can move it out of the city and it's a tax-free transaction.
Well,
because all you're doing is storing it once you bought it by moving it, under your definition, by moving it out of the city.
Well, if there were a tax that were due on that purchase-sale transaction, if it were not otherwise excluded from tax or exempted from tax, then a tax could be collected. It would have to be collected from the retailer. Now, we claim here that purchase-sale transaction is carved away from tax for two different reasons. One is the component parts exemption, which applies to both sales tax and the use tax. And one is the storage exclusion, which applies to the use tax once the purchase is made. And as we say in our briefs, the definition of storage that should be applied for the storage exclusion includes that earlier purchase transaction.
How do you square that with the definition of use that's in the regulations, which states that it includes the keeping, storage, withdrawing from storage, moving, installing, or performing other acts? The definition of use includes moving. So it would be almost nonsensical to say that storage includes moving, because they're treated as two different terms.
Right. I'd say a couple different things. First of all, the concept of use includes much more. The use tax applies to use, consumption, distribution, many different activities, okay? With respect to the storage exclusion, if you were to find that the movement of the construction material that's being stored barred the taxpayer from claiming the benefit of the exclusion, I submit that it would have no application at all. Because every time a party puts an item into storage, it has to get it there. It has to take it from the place where it purchased it and put it into storage. It has to take it from the place where it put it into storage and take it to the place where the final consumptive act will take place. And if that act of moving the item to the place of stationary storage or from the place of stationary storage precludes the exclusion, it would never apply. It would have no meaning. Now, there are circumstances under which movement of an item in conjunction with other activities, other types of consumption, some event that causes the alteration, manipulation of the item would be sufficient to create a taxable use. But it can't be the case for purposes of this storage exclusion, because otherwise it would have no meaning at all.
Is there any evidence in the record that there was storage in the more traditional sense, that once it was moved, it was actually just placed in storage?
There's evidence in the record that there was no alteration of the oil when it was put in the tanker trucks. That's in the affidavit of Kevin Anderson. And we submit that's really the critical distinction here. An item loses the benefit of the storage exclusion when something more is done that constitutes a consumptive act, when it's altered, manipulated in some kind of way. The definition of consumption in the Commerce City Code talks about destruction, waste, or use. Any of those types of activities would be some use of the item, of the oil in this case, within Commerce City that would be sufficient to allow the tax. But simply holding it in an unaltered form is not sufficient. And that shouldn't be different whether it's in a stationary silo or whether that silo is tilted on the back of a flatbed truck, which is really the case here, and put in storage tankers.
But my question was, other than putting it in the tanker for the purpose of moving it to some other location, is there any evidence of storage in the record?
I'm not sure I understand Your Honor's question.
Well, as I understand it, the oil was placed into a tanker truck and then moved somewhere. And my question is, was it moved to a storage location?
It was moved to a storage location outside of Commerce City. So it was further stored outside of Commerce City.
Stored for a period of months or?
Probably less than that. It was taken to one of the company's manufacturing plants.
And this is in the record?
Yes. I believe that's also in the Anderson affidavit. It was brought to the manufacturing plants. Either it was then consumed immediately in manufacturing asphalt, or it was kept in a stationary silo for a period of time until it was needed to manufacture asphalt.
I'm trying to understand then, if you have a transaction that should be subject to a sales tax, but for one reason or another, the sales tax is not collected, is there any situation in which a use tax could be collected? Because under your interpretation of storage, which merely requires movement of the item that's purchased, it would seem like there wouldn't be any use tax then allowed for anything that's purchased within the city where a sales tax isn't collected.
No, Your Honor, the exclusion that we're relying upon here, the storage exclusion, only applies to a narrow class of property, construction materials.
Okay.
The purpose behind that being that if the construction activity is going to take place outside the city, if those materials are going to come to rest in a home or in a road outside of Commerce City, they shouldn't be taxed before they leave Commerce City. The proper place to apply the tax would be where that final consumptive act takes place. In other cases not involving construction materials, the use, the holding of property would subject it to a use tax. That would be different. If a business buys something in a store and then it brings it to its warehouse and it leaves it there, take frankly any example other than construction material, there would be a use tax at that time. So this is a narrow exception to the general rule. And to the point of whether or not the items here have escaped the sales tax in some way, I think that invokes the component parts exemption, which really arises from the same policy considerations. It's the notion that when a manufacturer is manufacturing an item, tax should not be applied when the inputs are acquired, but rather should be applied when there's a final disposition of the output of the manufactured item, either a retail sale of that item or an internal consumption of the item by the manufacturer. So we defer application of the tax, and any tax, a sales tax and a use tax, at the time those component parts are acquired. So it's not the case here that there should have been a sales tax collected that wasn't, and now we're just asking whether or not a use tax has to be implied. There neither should have been a sales tax collected nor a use tax.
And do you agree we can look at the overall context, the overall scheme, and interpreting the code here? Do you think we're limited to the precise provision that's at issue here?
I think Your Honor's question to Mr. Wilson had to do with the definition of storage. And I do think that the court is limited to that definition of storage. I think the courts have stated in many different cases. The district court cited the Central City Opera case. There are a number of more recent cases by the Colorado Supreme Court. I could get Your Honor citations in just a moment that expressed the view that where the legislature defines a term within its code, that's the definition that should be applied, and only that definition. You don't look elsewhere. You don't presume that they meant something else. Here, Commerce City Council has defined the term storage, and that's the definition that should be applied. The Colorado Water Conservation Board case from 2005 also expresses that view, that if there's a legislative definition of a term, that should be applied.
Mr. Pomerantz, going back to your building components exemption, there's an exception for that, as I understand it, where items are used by persons who are if it does not apply when the purchaser of items is used by persons who are designated under this code as being ultimate consumers of materials that they purchase for their business operation, which is in the regulation.
Right.
And then there's also a statement that contractors are consumers of materials used by them in fulfilling construction contracts. So doesn't this definition not apply to building contractors like aggregate?
No, it doesn't. It's two things going on there. I think one thing that it's expressing is that if the consumption act takes place within Commerce City, tax is due to Commerce City. And let's be clear that if the road is paved within Commerce City gets taxed not just on the oil, but on every input that goes into that asphalt. Okay. In the circumstance that we have here, where you have a manufacturer that's buying input within Commerce City, some of which is going to go into asphalt that's going to be sold to third parties, and some of which is later going to be consumed by the manufacturer, by aggregate industries. The cases, the Conoco case, which involves Commerce City's own code, and the IBM case in particular, say that all of those items should be treated as wholesale transactions at the time they're purchased. They're deemed wholesale transactions. We may know that some portion of those inputs is going to be consumed internally down the road, but we don't know how much, and we don't know when. So we deem them all to be wholesale transactions. That's the language of the ordinance provision. At such later time as that asphalt is taken out of inventory by the manufacturer, say to pave a road in one of its own construction jobs, then the language that Your Honor cited states very clearly that the protection of this component parts exemption is lost. It is no longer a wholesale transaction. The manufacturer can no longer say, I don't have to pay any tax because of that component parts exemption. A tax is due. There is a taxable use. That's what was found in the IBM case and the Conoco case. What isn't answered by that provision is, where is that tax to be paid at that time? When that asphalt is taken out of inventory.
And that issue is not before us, is it?
It's before you to the extent that if the tax is properly due where the road is paved, then you don't go back to the earlier purchase of the oil, which is what Commerce City is saying, recharacterize that event and pay a sales tax that might have been due weeks or months or years earlier. So I think acknowledging, as the courts did in IBM and Conoco, that the tax is properly due where the consumptive act takes place also answers the question of whether or not you've got to go back in time and pay tax to the jurisdiction, or as is often the case, the many jurisdictions where the different inputs of that manufactured product would have been acquired.
I want to go back to my colleague's question, where he asked if there's ever a point, because I'm kind of hung up with this in my own mind, is there ever a use tax if everything becomes moving storage when a truck comes in, picks up materials, and immediately moves out?
Your Honor, I think the same, exact same question could be asked of the truck that just rolls through Commerce City with carrying construction materials as cargo. No, if all that is being done is picking up the construction materials and there's no consumptive act that takes place in the city, simply moving it out of the city in unaltered form is not going to trigger the tax. And that's perfectly consistent with the policy that underlines the storage exclusion for construction materials and the component parts exception. We're going to wait until that consumptive act takes place, and we're going to apply tax at that time. Otherwise, you end up having different jurisdictions applying taxes to all these intermediate stages within the stream of commerce, and you do have a pyramiding of the tax. Because I can assure you, despite what Mr. Wilson says, is that if Commerce City tax is one of the inputs, and five other jurisdictions each tax their inputs, when you get to the place of final consumption, that jurisdiction is going to say, well, we're not technically taxing the inputs, we're taxing the final product. We're taxing the asphalt. We're taxing something entirely different. So each jurisdiction is going to say they're taxing different items, and they're not going to be giving a credit. And I want to emphasize here that this is not a situation where tax is being avoided. Tax is paid. Where the road is paved, the tax is paid. Mr. Wilson says there's no way we can really know for sure. He conducted a 30B6 deposition where he had access to the person most knowledgeable about how our tax returns were prepared. He had access to boxes upon boxes of all of the tax returns we filed with the local jurisdictions over the period of 3 years. The taxes were paid. And I just want to, last point I want to emphasize is this is a two-way street. There will be some instances where inputs are acquired in Commerce City and the road is paved outside of Commerce City and someone else gets the tax. There can just as easily be cases where the inputs are acquired outside of Commerce City and the road is paved in Commerce City, which is what happened in the Conoco case, and then Commerce City gets taxed on all of the inputs that were consumed within their jurisdiction. Thank you.
I want to correct one misstatement by Mr. Pomerantz, and that's the fact that the use tax can only apply based upon subsequent events. In Commerce City and in many jurisdictions, when a sales tax is not collected on a retail purchase, which is what we have here with the one half of the material that aggregate used in its own projects, the city's code provides that the tax is due from the purchaser. That tax is called a use tax. Code section 2317, in the absence of the sales tax charge, the use tax is levied directly upon the purchaser. Code section 20-3-69, when no sales tax is paid on the purchase, the use tax is due. 25N, the obligation to pay the tax is on the purchaser or the consumer, whether it is called a sales tax or a use tax. It comes out of the same pocket, regardless of what it's called. The use tax and the sales tax are the same percentage, 3.5%. They're two sides of the same cone. The Conoco case.
Mr. Wilson, before you get to the Conoco case, how do you respond to Mr. Pomerantz's assertion that no sales tax was due on these transactions?
Well, they were, because we know, in reality, that 47% of the material purchased from KC Asphalt was ultimately consumed by aggregate in its own construction activities. Code sections 20SI15 specifically states that a contractor using materials and fulfilling its own construction contracts is the end user.
I understand that. And I understand also that his assertion was premised on the assumption that this component parts exception applies.
Mm-hmm.
So would you agree that if the component parts exception applies, then no sales tax was due on the transaction?
Yes. For the 53% that was actually resold to somebody else, we took the assessment once they substantiated those figures for us under oath, you know, provided as the documentation eventually in the 30B6 deposition, we cut the assessment in half. It went from over $600,000 to $300,000 because we recognized, hey, yeah, if you're going to go on and resell this, if you have a legitimate entitlement to an exemption, we'll acknowledge it. We'll acknowledge it if somebody else downstream lawfully imposes a tax and it's actually paid. will acknowledge that. All we're trying to do is not allow things to pass through the stream of commerce without any tax whatsoever. That's our obligation to the citizens. Briefly, in the Conoco case, it too also says vendors are liable for the payment of the sales tax, and if a sales tax has not been collected by a vendor, the purchaser is liable for the use tax. That's at page 896 of the Conoco case. Again, the taxable event here, it's the original purchase from Casey Asphalt. Half of that purchase is going to be exempt because it's ultimately resold. Half that is used by aggregating its own things, that's taxable. And both Conoco and IBM, I encourage you to read the opinions, they both look back to the original purchase. That's the taxable event. IBM calls it the event that attracts the tax. When we recharacterize a tax that was considered to be wholesale, and we realize that we actually used this material ourselves, that original purchase is recharacterized from being a wholesale transaction, which might be tax-free, to one that is a retail transaction and for which tax is due. And there's no basis in the case law or in the statutes to say that the taxing jurisdiction changes. That's just made up entirely. That's all time I have. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Wilson. Thank you, counsel, for your arguments today. The case will stand submitted. And an opinion will issue in due course. I believe that's all of the cases that are on our docket for this afternoon. So the court will stand in recess, and the bailiff may so announce.
The call will be in recess, subject to call.